You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Coe, joined by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. Today, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, cover player performances from this past week, and give some streaming recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. I'm looking forward to the U.S. men's national team. Got their final group stage game tonight since we're recording this on Thursday. Should be fun, even though, you know, they already got their spot in the next round, but been enjoying soccer just like I've been enjoying baseball for a couple of months. But I'm worried we might have cursed Kevin Gausman. He's had a bad outing tonight and a really bad outing, you know, the last time right after we talked about him. So I guess we got to be careful what we say. But yeah, I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We also apparently cursed Nolan McClain because yesterday he was smooth sailing until the sixth inning. And then, that did not go well for him in that first game of that doubleheader. Watch out for, I guess, the other guys we're going to talk about today, which include Jose Soriano, Trevor Rogers, Bryce Elder, Kyle Bradish, and Hazel Zizardo, and Griffin Jacks. You know, maybe you don't want to rise to those guys next week.
Maybe we only say bad things, then they'll do well, you know, a little reverse psychology.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's baseball, right? Just the classic. Just people go on a hot streak, and then all of a sudden, it all falls apart. I guess the funny thing in Gausman's case was that he had just kind of come off a bad, you know, two-game stretch, was doing pretty well and gassing him up a little bit, and all of a sudden, it's like, nope, he's back to maybe, going between the bad starts and the good starts.
Yeah, definitely some highs and lows along the way. And I do feel like, you know, the weather's warming up. There are some higher scoring games happening. I guess there are some questions around the ball and is the ball livelier or not. I don't think we have an answer on it yet, but just something to be aware of.
Yeah, I know I saw the video of Ronald Acuña Jr. looking at two baseballs trying to figure out if one was different than the other. And it's just like, I have no idea what he's seeing, but if there's anyone to figure out there's something weird with the ball, I'm sure Acuña would be the first person to have an idea of what's going on there.
Might have been on to something there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever else you listen to your podcast. Make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Moving into injuries, we've got not that long of a list this week, but maybe a good or a bad thing. We're going to start off with injury placements, and we're going to start off with basically just a bunch of pitchers. Steven Matz going on the 15 DIL with a left ankle sprain. Eber Cabrera going on the 15 DIL with a hamstring strain. He got this actually when he was doing the split spreading over the first, which that always sucks when that happens unexpectedly. Ben Brown going on the 15 DIL with a neck stress reaction. Lucas Giolito, he's going on the 15 DIL with right elbow inflammation. Marcus Semien, surprise visit to the IL for him. He's going on the 10-day IL with left hip flexor strain. Zach Eflin going on the 10-day IL with a hand injury. It's kind of a weird situation where I believe he was trying to slide and somehow cut his hand or something. And then Michael Garcia also going on the 10-day IL with a hand injury. So some notable names that probably are on fantasy rosters, but probably not a bunch of big impact injuries.
Yeah, the hits just keep coming for this Cubs rotation. They got a couple guys coming back that we'll talk about in just a second to hopefully stem the tide a little bit, but some really bad luck there, you know, just joining Cade Horton and Justin Steele on the IL, you know, for the Cubs. And then, yeah, a couple of middle infielders go down, so a thin, you know, second and third base position where a couple of those guys have eligibility, you know, just gets a little thinner. I think, yeah, Geloff, he was trying to tag Matt Chapman, and he got his hand stepped on, and he got taken out of the game. And he was 0-for-1, so he had a 24-game hit streak going. He lost his hit streak, and then that was his last game before hitting the IL. So it was kind of an unexpected breakout, but it was really fun while it lasted. So hopefully he can, you know, won't miss too much time and can get back and keep producing. But bummer to see, you know, someone kind of having a great stretch and then go down like that.
Yeah, I kind of dodged a bullet a little bit. I was in the Dynasty League. I was getting offered Zach Geloff as part of a kind of a bigger deal for Fernando Tatis, And at that time, I was looking at Gelof's numbers, and I was just like, I don't know if I believe this. And then I guess, you know, obviously he dodged the injury bullet. But yeah, he was definitely on a little bit of a streak where you were kind of looking at him like, is this guy going to be like a top 10 second baseman again for the remainder of the season? And it was a little hard to believe. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see that for a little bit now because of this injury.
Yeah, and just when things are getting fun in Sacramento too, you know, the ball's really going to start flying.
Yeah, exactly. Just let's hope. I'm just hoping Brett Rooker gets back fast enough. I need him to just start hitting some bombs in that park.
Amen to that.
Yeah. In terms of some returns, like you mentioned, Matthew Boyd of the Cubs, he's now back after nearly 2 months on the injury list. He did try to make a comeback about maybe a couple weeks ago and then stopped the rehab, but now he is back. He's going to be starting today. I don't think the game's happened yet, so we won't have the stats from that one just yet. Corey Seager back from concussion protocol, no issues there. I believe he was batting third again. So, you know, hopefully at least now that he's healthy, he's able to turn around the season a little bit. Tyler Molly back for the Giants, 5.2 innings, 4 strikeouts, 2 walks, 2 hits, and no earned runs in his return at Oracle Park. Francisco Lindor, he was back yesterday in the second game of the doubleheader between the Mets and the Cubs. He's been out for over 2 months. And yeah, I mean, it's just nice to have a guy of his caliber back, but we'll see kind of how he makes his way back in terms of the stats. Yuri Perez came back, 4.2 innings, 1 strikeout, no walks, 3 hits, 1 on run. So not a terrible start for him. Shea Bieber back for the Blue Jays, 3.2 innings, 2 strikeouts, no walks, but 9 hits and 4 on run. So definitely a little bit of a still ill with that start for sure. Mickey Moniak back on Monday. He missed a month with an ankle injury, but is returning for the Rockies, I believe. And then Jack Flaherty, he has not been activated yet, but all signs point to him being returning to Detroit on Sunday. And so he'll be back to, you know, potentially, I think he still has some fantasy value, not a ton, but, you know, still worth a look at in some 12 and 15 teams. But it'll be nice to get him back into the fold as well for a Detroit team that's also dealing with a bunch of injuries in their rotation.
Yeah, some important pitcher returns here. I think that Molly might be kind of the underrated, interesting one. Obviously, he's close to fully stretched out. You know, he went pretty deep in this one. And I think his fastball velocity was up like a tick, tick and a half. And obviously, the results were really good, too. So I think it's a two-step next week, like at Arizona and then in Coors. So a little bit tough to, you know, be confident in the second half of that one. But yeah, someone to, you know, just have on your radar and know that he is back in the fold.
Yeah, for sure. A guy who, if he's starting at home, which I believe this game was, they were facing the A's. It's a really good opportunity for a stream there if he's available like that, just because Oracle Park just plays so well for pitchers. And he seems to do a good job. At least this year he has been in pitching in that park. In terms of other injury news, Ryan Nelson, he was officially transferred to the 60-day IL, expected to miss rest of season. I believe he's got like an issue with his left arm. Chris Bubich threw 8 pitches in his first rehab assignment. He did start one earlier this month, but now he had a setback. Now he's back. So at least nice to see that he is on the mound. It's going to be a while before he returns, though. Connor Griffin played 7 innings at shortstop in his first rehab game. Probably expect a couple more before he makes his return to Pittsburgh, but I would expect that probably happens next week. Blake Snell is going to throw a 15-pitch BP on Friday, so starting his slow return back from the injured list. Would expect the Dodgers to take their time with Snell coming back. Mick Abel is getting arthroscopic surgery on his elbow. It's not Tommy John, but he is going to be out for a few more months. So if you were stashing him and hoping he was going to return maybe this week, unfortunately, that is not going to be happening anymore. He's not going to be back probably until late August or September. Kyle Tucker, currently day-to-day with back spasms. He missed the entire Minnesota series. Of course, he could be back healthy again on Friday. We'll see. But that's just something to monitor for sure. And, you know, the Dodgers are more than willing to take their time with their guys as long as they're healthy in October. Bobby Witt Jr. still dealing with an MCL strain. He has yet to be placed on the IL, but he has missed about 5 games, I believe, so far. So just something to monitor there, where whether the Royals decide to put him on the injured list or not. Juan Soto was day-to-day with back tightness. He did play today on Thursday, but just something to monitor for sure. Just hope that this doesn't come up again throughout the season as a more serious injury. And then finally, CJ Abrams, currently day-to-day with left side tightness as well. He has not played in the game yet. I believe he's been out for about 3 days. But something to monitor just to see if it ends up being like an oblique injury or something like that that could result for a trip to the IL for him. In terms of some other news, David Peterson is traded to the Cubs. You know, more reinforcements for that Cubs rotation. But at the same time, Peterson has not had a very solid season this year. I believe his ERA is like over six. So even though, you know, the Cubs do get some backup in their rotation, I'm not sure if it's really anything quality there. Connor Norby, option to AAA, kind of just notable there in terms of the fact that he's probably on some 15-team roster. So just something to check out there and make sure you drop him. And then Max Kepler, he is back as a strong side platoon back. He was coming back from a PED suspension, so he missed the first half of the season. But now he's back with the Diamondbacks. I think his value is still not great. He wasn't really that good with the Phillies last year. And since he's really only going to be facing righties, which, you know, is going to be a good amount of games nonetheless, he still needs to perform against righties. And if he doesn't, I don't think the Diamondbacks have any reason to hold on to him. They, you know, the good chance he could be cut bait if he just does not perform.
Yeah, he'll have some runway to playing time. You know, I think they released Carlos Santana and then the Ildemar Vargas heater, you know, is kind of over. So there is some paths to playing time there, and maybe he'll run with it. But yeah, just nothing worth, you know, nothing actionable at this point, but just good to know that he is around.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps it up for the news and notes around the leagues. We're moving on to player performances starting on June 19th. Who do we got?
Sure. So Ryan Clark was on our hitter recap on the 19th with Vive La France for Ty France. Had a good game, and he's back with the Padres now, having a couple of good games. But I'm going to be talking about someone with a little bit more hype surrounding them who has been on a really great run lately. That's Jack Caglione, outfielder for the Royals. He was 2-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBIs on Friday. And Ryan recently covered Jack Cags in his Is It Legit article, and his conclusion was he felt like the home run pace, it's about a 30-homer pace at this point, is going to keep sustaining, but he thinks the ratios might take a hit. Cags does have that legit power, you know, that made him such an exciting prospect. But it's a little bit boom or bust, as we saw last year with some real struggles, you know, adjusting to the league in his rookie season. And the strikeouts are piling up a little bit, but he hit some no-doubt home runs, just like he did in this one, which was an 110-mile-per-hour homer that went 404 feet. So, yeah, Jack Cags had a rough game today, 0-for-4 with 3 Ks, but he's been awesome in June and especially the last 2 weeks. Since June 9th, he's got 8 homers, including 3 2-homer games, so he's really hitting them in bunches. Right now, he's hitting 270 on a 30-homer pace, which has him at outfielder 27 on the Fangraphs player rater for default formats. So let's take that 27 rank. Do you feel like he's going to keep rising and this heater is going to continue, or do you think that he might drop off a little bit by the end of the season? Where are you kind of rest the season on Jack Cags?
Yeah, my gut says he drops off. I think the power is real. He had an 11% barrel rate last year. He's up to the 16.8% this year, so a little bit more reason to believe that the power is legit, but I think the strikeout rate is going to catch up to him. He currently has a 29.5% strikeout rate, a 30% whiff rate. But really, I think what's going to hurt him is just the fact that that average is just too high. 272, I believe that's probably going to come down. His expected average right now, according to Pitcherlist, is 262. So it's not like he's, you know, really going far and above what the expected stats say he is going to do, but he does have a 352 BABIP that feels really high. I think all signs just kind of point to him at least losing some points in average, and I think that's just going to diminish some of his value if he's not able to hit homers like he is before. I think he could probably get to 25 homers. I think that's definitely within his reach, but whether, you know, he's able to maintain this average or if that drops to more of like a low to mid 200 average, that's probably going to lose some of his usefulness and probably drop him by a couple spots in the outfielder rankings.
Yeah, I think I could see him finishing in the top 30, but I think most likely just outside. It is a little bit of batting average regression coming. I don't think it'll be a ton, though. I do think, you know, obviously he strikes out more than a 270 hitter usually does, but he hits the ball a lot harder than, you know, almost anybody in the league. So it's one of those profiles where he's probably going to run a high BABIP because he doesn't hit a ton of fly balls and he hits the ball really hard. So I think, you know, maybe 350 BABIP that he's had so far is a little high, but I could see, you know, well over 300 still maintaining over the course of the year. And then the Royals offense is just, you know, obviously they have Bobby Witt, but Vinny Pasquantino is hurt and had a really disappointing year. Michael Garcia, same thing. So I think the counting stats are going to suffer here a little bit. So it is the type of thing where the home runs really do need to carry the profile. So yeah, I think he's got a good chance to like return his draft value, you know, like pick 150, 200 type range if he keeps up this pace. But yeah, I think that there are a couple factors, you know, preventing him from really like breaking out, you know, and returning like a top 20 outfielder type season.
Yeah, and you could argue finishing as a top 30 outfielder just outside, you know, like maybe top 35, is still really good for Cags, right? I think that's a positive for him. And there's, you know, there's still definitely room to grow. I'm also with you there on the counting stats. Like he's got 39 runs at 30 RBI, right? Like I would be surprised if he goes past his pace and is able to hit like 80 on either of those by the end of the season. But yeah, something just to monitor for sure.
Right. It's definitely a big step forward. You know, he was probably the worst hitter in the league last year. Obviously, a lot of that's a 172 BABIP, but still, it's, you know, it's nice to see him bounce back and kind of start having success after, you know, a rough half season when he debuted. On the pitching side, someone who is having the down arrow instead of the up arrow is Jose Soriano of the Angels. He was at the A's in this one. So tough park, took the no decision, but didn't pitch well. 5 innings, 4 earned, 6 hits, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. 17 whiffs and a 33% CSW, pretty solid on 105 pitches, but Nick feels like he's ready to call it quits on Soriano. After this start, it was a 4.93 ERA and a 1.56 whip and a 14% walk rate and 9 starts since the beginning of May when his kind of historic start to the season came to an end. The four-seamer was good in this one, 8 whiffs, 46% CSW on 70% strikes, but everything else was really rough, so it was kind of only having success with one pitch. And the walks have come back, the hard hit ground balls are back, and the strikeouts are, you know, not quite the same as they were early in the season. So even though he has a 15% swing strike rate since April. And Nick, yeah, he feels like it's only the four-seamer at this point that's a reliable offering for Soriano, and he's ready to let him go. And it was another one, another bad outing this week for Soriano against my Orioles. I don't remember the exact line, but I think it was somewhere around like a 2 whip, and he gave up a few runs, so... The whip regression especially has been really rough. The season-long numbers still look, you know, pretty good, especially the ERA and the wins. But are you ready to, you know, kind of let him go everywhere? Or where are you on Soriano right now after this, you know, really rough stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Soriano we're seeing now is probably the Soriano we're going to see for the rest of the season, where maybe he's able to go a little deeper into games, right? Maybe he's able to, like this start you're specifically talking about this one, he went 5 innings. And yesterday started against Baltimore, he only went 3. But yeah, I would just expect, you know, kind of like a 5-inning, 4-earned run or 3-earned run outing is maybe what you can expect from him at this point. Just nothing super spectacular. And that's just going to be an issue for him. He still walks too many guys to be considered decent, right? 12% walk rate this year. And so, like, even if he does get strikeouts, right, like, if he's still letting guys on the base pass and still giving up hits, it's just going to result in runs. And I think it's as simple as that. I think that walk rate is just indicative of the fact that, like, he's just not that good of a pitcher. And, you know, there's still opportunities to stream him for sure because of the strikeouts. But at the same time, you know, I would not be worried about trying to keep him on your roster.
Yeah, I think that you can cut him if, you know, you see something exciting on the wire or you need to activate somebody. I actually have him in 2 leagues, you know, that I care about. And one of them, I have Matthew Boyd still on my IL. He just started today. And I'm kind of between dropping Soriano and Emmett Sheehan. So I'm just going to wait and see how Emmett Sheehan does this weekend and, you know, kind of make the decision after that. And then the other league I have him in is a 12-team where starting pitchers are really, like, highly valued because quality starts and wins are a category. So he's definitely sliding down my pecking order. It's at Seattle is his next one, so seemingly a decent matchup, but obviously, you know, walks are going to follow you anywhere you go, so that might kind of be my last chance for him to stay on the roster. So I'm definitely getting close in shallow leagues to being a universal cut. I think, you know, 15s, you have to be a little bit more patient, but yeah, it's definitely trending down, unfortunately, at this point.
Yeah. All right, moving on to June 20th. Thanks to Kevin O'Brien for the Schwarber Shop Trio hitter recap article. And we're going to talk about a different slugger, not Kyle Schwarber, in Travis Bezzano of the Guardians, who went 4-for-4 with 2 homers, 3 runs, and 5 RBI. Since making his debut, the former number one overall pick in the 2024 draft has lived up to the hype. He's hitting .274 with an .845 OPS and 195 plate appearances. And then on Saturday, he hit 2 homers against the Astros. Really impressive. And of course, we mentioned this last week, but Cleveland is looking for some offense with Jose Ramirez out. And it looks like Bezzano is maybe able to step into that void. And kind of just with how he's played over the last, basically he's up to 200 plate appearances now. Is Bezzano a must roster? I was looking at his fantasy pros. It looks like there's still about 40% of leagues that he's not picked up in. And I would just say, you know, like if you just have a 12 teamer, for example, are you going out to pick up Bezzano right now?
Yeah, I think he should be owned everywhere for sure. OBP leagues, absolutely. And even average leagues, I would say yes. He's been great option at me for me at second base in one of my OCs. I was happy to get him in Fab. And yeah, it's 50 games so far and it's 7 homers and 12 steals, right? So you can't just, you know, prorate that out and say he's a 20-30 guy, but he does have that skill set. So yeah, even in the lackluster Cleveland offense, I think that there's enough power, speed, ability here to just keep rolling with it. He walks a lot. He doesn't strike out a ton. And he pulls his fly balls, you know, to really tap into that power. So the bat speed, the hard hit stuff isn't suggestive of a 20 homer hitter, but he does, you know, all of his home runs are to the pull side and all of them are, you know, almost down the line. At least half of them are basically down the line. So yeah, I think that the speed is more likely to stick. You know, he's 12-for-15 on the bases so far, which is great. But I think he's going to chip in power too. So yeah, at a weaker second base position, I feel pretty good about Bezzano as a starting option, you know, kind of regardless of your league depth.
Yeah, 5% barrel rate, which I think speaks to the fact that maybe the power is not his first tool. But, you know, a .261 average compared to a .256 expected average from our pitchless stats. And so, you know, kind of at least what he's doing right now seems believable, kind of similar to what we were talking about with Jake Hags. Like, you know, Hags might not actually drop that much in average. And I think the similar could be said about Bezzano, where, you know, that was kind of one of his tools coming out of Oregon State. So nice to see him at least have some success here in the majors as well.
Right. And, you know, the ex-WOBA and all that type of stuff, you know, if you look at our player pages, which we adjust for the spray angle, you know, the ex-WOBA is basically in line with the WOBA and his expected slugging is actually a little higher than his current slugging. Whereas if you were to look on Savant, you know, they don't consider the angle the ball's, you know, pulled or hit the other way at, and they're definitely lower on the slugging at 376. So yeah, I think that that just is an indicator that maybe the homer power isn't, you know, completely sustainable, but he is doing something, you know, to try to tap into his power, you know, hitting it out to the easiest part of the park.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Jake Crumpler for the WB's Summer Blockbuster SP Roundup article. Referring to Walker Buehler, who had a nice little start against the Rangers. But we're going to talk about Trevor Rogers, who went up against the Dodgers and got the win. 7 innings, no one runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Yeah, this was kind of an interesting start for Rogers. I mean, hard to expect anything good against the Dodgers, but it worked out for him. He actually was up a tick in this start with the four-seamer sitting at 94, 95 miles an hour. Unfortunately, the problem with this start, even though the numbers were great, was that he wasn't really able to execute the Blake Snell blueprint. The changeup wasn't really commanded very well. And so pretty much everything but the four-seamers combined for 53% strikes. So it's actually kind of surprising that he went 7, which is how many pitches were not landing in the strike zone. But yeah, part of the problem of it was maybe a little bit of luck, 14 outs on 15 balls in play. And so got a bunch of foul balls on the heater as well to pick up strikes. And so ultimately, I think the real thing to look at here is Trevor Rogers real? I mean, obviously the start against the Dodgers was quite kind of surprising, but you look at the season long stats, 5.3 ERA, 1.36 whip, not great. But going forward for the rest of the season, do you think this start indicates maybe a turnaround for him, or was it just kind of a one-off and we're kind of back to who he's been for the entire season?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was definitely due for some positive regression, just in terms of how bad the ratios have been. Obviously, some of that's maybe evening out from last year when the ratios were unsustainably good. But yeah, I think that this is nice to see, and it is a stretch of four straight starts where he's gone at least 5 2/3 in all four, and he's given up, just six combined earned. So he's in a nice run, but I think it's still at the point where he's more of a shallow league streamer type. I think I might prefer him like over Soriano, just because he's trending up, whereas Soriano is trending down. But yeah, I don't think that this was necessarily a breakout start or anything like that. But I have noticed that he's been throwing a little harder in some of his outings recently. So yeah, hopefully he's just not he's just feeling like he needs to succeed, and he's just going to go all out to string those good outings together. So yeah, I think that it gets him back on like my watch list, so to speak, but I'm not rushing out to add him.
Yeah, and I think the thing that Jake points out is just that the secondaries for Rodgers aren't doing a whole lot just yet. He doesn't really have a whiff pitch. I mean, like, he has a sweeper that has like a 15% swing strike rate, so that's pretty decent, but he only uses it 11% of the time, right? He's still mainly four seam changeup with a sinker sprinkled in. And the changeup itself, like, is a fine pitch, but it's not really anything to write home about. And so if he just is relying on that four seam a bunch, but it is, maybe a little bit higher velo, maybe that helps him out a little bit. But he needs those secondaries to pick up to really become a bit more effective like he was last season.
Yeah, the secondaries are weird. I think the changeup is solid, but the sweeper and cutter, like, they're both pretty slow by sweeper and cutter standards, and their movement isn't, like anything exceptional. So yeah, I do feel like he is definitely lacking kind of that breaking ball, really quality breaking ball offering. And after, hitters struggled to adjust to him last year, clearly they're making those adjustments this year. So going to the 21st, Pikachu used Weatherholt was Kyle Stanzl's hitter recap for JJ Weatherholt. I'm going to be talking about a teammate actually of JJ Weatherholt though, and that is catcher slash DH Yvonne Herrera. He was 3 for 5 in this one with a homer, 3 runs, and 3 RBI. They got out to a big lead early, the Cardinals did in this one. The Royals fought back to make it a 9-7 game by the end of the fourth inning, so super high scoring affair. But Herrera came up in the fifth and hit a 3-run homer, and that was enough for them to hang on with the 12-10 win. And yeah, he's just kind of been extremely solid, quietly excellent, I would say, this season. His line after this one was 265, 405, 429, with 10 steals and 5 homers, and a 140 WRC plus, which is tied for second among all qualified catchers. Not quite as good in fantasy compared to, the WRC plus, just because of all the walks, but he's currently catcher 7 on the Fangraphs player rater. Do you feel like he's been a little underrated this season, and do you believe in him, to keep this up?
I had Herrera in a dynasty league on Fantrax, so he didn't get eligibility at catcher for a while, which was kind of frustrating. So he was occupying my util position, but when he finally got catcher, I was, pretty happy about that. He's not going to have, like, the crazy stat lines, like, in terms of homers of guys like, well, Dylan Dingler this year, for an example, but, like, Shea Langeliers comes to mind, Hunter Goodman. I think he's doing pretty solid. I mean, I'd like to see the average up but just a little bit, but that OBP is really impressive, at 404, and the strikeout rate has improved this season as well, 15.5%. The walk rate is incredible, 13.6%. So, I think he's just underrated because I think he's just a lot better in OBP leagues, and you don't see that value come out so much in the average. He's up to 5 steals as well, which, I mean, that's not really a big part of his game, but he does, have some speed tendencies. So if he could somehow finish the season with, I mean, like a 2010 season would be great for him, I think. But even if it was just kind of like a 15-10 season for me, I think I'd be pretty happy if he's able to kind of maintain like a 260 to 280 batting average.
Yeah, I wonder if, the steals is something that he's doing a little more because he is still DHing more than he's catching. Maybe the body's a little fresher. It's 5, 8, and 5 steals the last 3 years, and he's 18 for 20 on the bases. So I like that, the chances of that to keep up. And the volume is just awesome from the catcher position. He's basically an everyday guy. He's on pace to score over 100 runs, which you pretty much never see from a catcher. And he's hitting second every day with great on base skills. So I like the chances of that, you know, keeping up and him getting a decent shot at that 100 run. So yeah, I think a guy who, you know, contributes in all categories and is a plus in runs can definitely be underrated in fantasy. So I'm really happy with what we've seen from Herrera so far.
Yeah, and one thing to note too is just how sneaky good this Cardinals offense is. I mean, I know the rotation has a lot of issues, but you know, the offense is really pretty decent with, you know, Jordan Walker, JJ Weatherholt, Alec Burleson, Herrera obviously as well. Like it's a decent group of guys who can string together some runs.
Yeah, and they've really stayed healthy too, and they just got Lars Nootbaar back. So it's like, you know, they don't have the names necessarily that'll wow you, but it does feel like a pretty solid lineup bottom to top. On the hitting side, JC Penny pinching was Nick's SP roundup for Gene Cabrera, who is a Diamondbacks prospect who had a nice debut. I'm going to be talking about another struggling arm, though, and that is someone that we do talk about quite often and I usually do beat up on, but I do feel like there's reason for it. And Bryce Elder showed that in this one. He took the loss against the Brewers. It was ugly. 6 innings, 8 earned, 12 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. 10 whiffs and a 32% CSW, though, on 95 pitches. And yeah, Elder, you know, he came out of the gates hot, and we talked about how at least I didn't feel like the start was sustainable. And now his numbers are just kind of pedestrian. He's got a 3.71 ERA and a 1.21 whip and a sub 20% strikeout rate. And that, you know, is coming off just a month ago. He was at a 1.97 and a 0.99. So some steep regression happened here for Elder. He had some success when he was going up and into lefties. But now the slider, the four seam, the cutter, the change, you know, all those offerings to complement the sinker are starting to leak over the plate and he's getting punished. Nick feels like the margin for error with Elder's arsenal, you know, he's definitely a command over stuff guy, is just too low and he's ready to move on, even though it will be this weekend against the Giants in Oracle Park. Are you done here with Elder too? If you had him anywhere, have you seen, you know, enough regression to kind of jump ship?
Yeah, I don't have Elder anywhere, mostly because I think you could just convince me it was not worth trying to look at him anyways. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just look at all his pitches, and besides that sinker, everything has a CSW that's in, you know, lower than 50th percentile, 47th percentile for the slider, 48th percentile for the four seam, 10% for the cutter. Obviously, that sinker is really good at 93%, but a lot of this is driven by Colt Strikes, which you kind of mentioned, right? He's more of a command over stuff guy. And if he starts missing his spots, is not getting those called strikes anymore, he really just doesn't have that great whiff pitch. I mean, like the slider is decent at 17% swing strike rate. But, you know, overall, it's not necessarily like an incredible pitch. So I think it's just something to note just that, like, yeah, his secondaries, I mean, if you can call them that, right? Basically, the pitches that build off his sinker aren't necessarily contributing as much from a strike perspective. I think that's just going to hurt him a little bit. But other than that, I mean, compared to last season, you know, pretty solid. I think he's still probably worth having on a team in like a 15 teamer, right? I think a deep league still makes sense to have Bryce Elder just because he can at least have decent pedestrian starts. But yeah, I think in a 12 teamer for sure, I think there's better options available on the wire.
Right. If you want to give him, you know, one last chance against the Giants in a good park, you know, with the good matchup, you're trying to get a win or something, I can understand. But yeah, the skills are, you know, they're the same as they've been. And for his career, he's a 4.42 ERA and a 1.33 whip. So, you know, I think you kind of know who he is. I will say that, you know, maybe the next time, like let's say it's next season, he has a couple of good starts, maybe I'll be, you know, I won't dismiss him out of hand, right? Because I'll remember that he can have these runs. But I think, you know, you also have to remember that they usually do come to an end, and it came to an end, you know, pretty quickly this time with 14 earned in just 2 starts. So, you know, you can wade into the waters, but just be careful because, you know, that it might come back to bite you, you know, pretty quickly with a guy like this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can't argue with the fact that he still has 10 quality starts, 16 starts, right? Like pretty decent numbers there. It's just that now, when things are starting to fall apart, as they have in the last 2 starts, that's maybe when it's indicative to, you know, just hang it up and take him off your team.
Yeah, be happy with what you got and, you know, move on to someone with a little more upside.
Right. All right, moving on to the 22nd. Thanks to Ryan Amore for Ward of the Flies. And we are going to talk about the title man in Taylor Ward, who went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 1 homer, and 1 RBI. He's been operating as Baltimore's leadoff batter. And he's really brought down his swing rate. It's come down by 5 percentage points. And the chase rate for him is also really solid at 13%. But I think the problem with Ward is just the other stats. I think that's the problem that we all have. He currently, according to his like power numbers on Pitcherless, he's now down to 99, which is basically league average, which is a far cry from a guy who hit 36 homers last season. Right now, he only has 5 homers, and he hasn't had necessarily any major health issues. He's played 81 games. You know, the average is decent at 257, but the OBP is really where it's at 389. But unfortunately, in, you know, 5x5 leagues, you don't get credit for that. Nonetheless, you know, he's been at least hitting. I believe he hit 2 homers in 2 straight games this past week. So I think he hit a homer on Sunday, hit another one on Monday. And so, yeah, we're at the halfway point of the season. Obviously, it's been a disappointing first half in his new digs in Baltimore. But do we believe that the second half could bring something different for Ward? Or has his change to his approach really just kind of sapped his fantasy value, unfortunately, right now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely taken a big hit in leagues that don't use OBP. You know, I have him in, or I had him in a 16 teams, but it's only like 9 starting outfield spots. So it kind of plays more like a 12 team or 14 team on offense. And I eventually just dropped him because, you know, he was only at 3 home runs before this little heater. And yeah, he was just kind of steady, but not really doing anything too remarkable besides the, you know, 100 run pace. And yeah, the swing rate, he's just being really patient, and I guess it's working as a, you know, conventional leadoff hitter, but it's not, you know, the fantasy friendly profile that we saw with 36 homers last year. So yeah, it's been disappointing. The bat speed is down, you know, like a tick and a half. And I think at one point, you know, it seemed like he got hit by a pitch in maybe like late April. Yeah. And the next couple of weeks after that, like, he just wasn't really swinging and wasn't doing much damage. So I don't know if he hasn't fully recovered from that or what's going on. But yeah, I do think that, you know, I like his chances of more than doubling his homer total the rest of the year. But, you know, that could still only be like 10 home runs the rest of the year. So I do think it is, you know, a different profile that we should expect from Ward going forward. And I think that profile is kind of more in line with what he was before last year when he really kind of broke out from a power perspective.
Yeah, he said he was dealing with a bone bruise in his hand, so kind of aligning with what you were talking about. Yeah, I've kind of been used to Taylor Ward being at least like a, you know, a 20 homer guarantee. I mean, I know he's only really done that 3 times in his career, so it's hard to call that the guarantee. But the walk rate this year is insane at 17.2%. He's cut down the strikeout rate by a ton, by 20.9%. So yeah, it's clearly a change to how he is approaching the plate. And yeah, well, it probably lends to good baseball, right? He has 52 runs. Like, that's really positive. It doesn't really lend itself well to fantasy baseball because he's just hurting in pretty much every other category besides runs and, I guess, average a little bit.
Yeah, there was a point when I checked his player page and he had like a 29% swing rate, which I've never seen a swing rate below 30% from anybody. And now he's at like 33.5%, and that's still the lowest in the league. So that just tells you, you know, how kind of patient, maybe even passive, he has been at the plate this year.
Yeah. Moving on to pitchers, who will win the Bennett was the SB Roundup title from Nick Pollock, talking about Jake Bennett. But we are talking about another Baltimore player, and that is Kyle Bradish, who in this game against the Angels got the win, 8 innings, no one runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. I'm a little annoyed here because I dropped Bradish a couple weeks ago, and of course he turns around and has this incredible start against the Angels. Velocity, pretty decent. It was actually kind of sticking with where it's been for the past couple starts, 89-mile-an-hour slider. He's tossing in curveballs at 85 miles an hour, and really did not use the four-seamer at all in this one. Was really going heavy sinker slider, which of course is his bread and butter. But that four-seamer, he's been using it at an 18% usage this year. So he's actually brought it down from last year, but it just maybe has not been the most successful pitch, only 26% CSW. But yeah, Nick really liked this formula, really going on sinker slider to righties, and then just some curveballs and sinkers to lefties. And yeah, do you think kind of this improvement, I guess we could say, from Bradish is real, or is this kind of just, again, a little bit of some excitement that we've seen for the past, basically this season, where he has like a couple really good starts, but then unfortunately it kind of falls apart in a couple more starts. And it basically is just kind of this undulating good Bradish, bad Bradish that makes it hard to trust him in fantasy.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit more of the latter. You know, the Angels are obviously a really soft matchup right now, especially without Trout, and he took full advantage of it. So, yeah, I think that the command and control kind of regression that we've seen this year is still pretty concerning. He's walking. I think he has a double-digit walk rate. Yeah,
it's 11%
walk rate, and
yeah.
His zone rate is in the 9th percentile right now. So he's just struggling to really pound the zone, and I think a lot of that maybe is reliance on those breaking balls. And his sinker even moves a lot; like it's very sharp movement, and that that's not always easy to land in the zone. So, yeah, I think that some of this, and he had a really good outing against the Mariners before this, so he is on a nice run right now. I do think he was due for some regression. You know, with the ERA, he was like mid fours, which he's just not that type of guy. But the WHIP is still at 1.45, even after all these great outings. And I do think that he, will continue to be a WHIP liability moving forward. But there is some strikeout and ERA upside here too. So, yeah, a little bit of like a cherry bomb type of profile, I would say. I don't think he's, turned the corner and is going to start pitching like he did last year or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, last year's numbers, which, again, were only through six starts, so extremely small sample size. 2.53 ERA, 1.03 WHIP, right? The last full season he pitched, 2023, that was really good. 2.83 ERA, 1.04 WHIP. And we, he's been unable to have a full season the last two seasons. So now that he's actually looking healthy this year, it is a little worrying to kind of see that, at least that uptick in walk rate that is kind of lending itself to that uptick in the WHIP as well. So it is, yeah. I wish the numbers were better for Bradish. His strikeouts are just, his strikeout rate is insane, despite the fact that, he walks many guys. I mean, it's only a 24% strikeout rate, but, like, he had 12 strikeouts against the Mariners. He had 9 in this one against LA. He clearly has the stuff, but it's the command part that is just really tough for him, unfortunately. And that just leads to me not being able to trust him too much in fantasy, even as much as I'd like to hold him on for starts like this.
Yeah, you could try to sell high somewhere, on the back of these two starts. And yeah, I think Washington this weekend at home will be a good challenge. They're a really solid lineup with a lot of lefties. So we'll see, if he can keep things going or not. On the hitting side, going to the 23rd, Lofton expectations was Griffey Geis' hitter recap for Nick Lofton. But I'm going to be talking about Bryson Stott, the Phillies second baseman. He was 3-for-4 with the homer, four runs, 3 RBIs, and a steal. So a combo meal with a ton of counting stats here. And yeah, Stott's his 3 hits came in his last 3 at-bats of the game. First 2 were singles, and then he stepped up and hit a 403-foot homer in his final at-bat. And from a real-life perspective, it's been a little bit disappointing with fantasy or with his hitting, 92 WRC plus this season. But he's on fire the last 15 games, slashing .333, .410, .519, good for a 159 WRC plus. And he's on like a 15 homer, 30 steal pace right now after this hot stretch. So he's kind of starting to become a little bit of a quietly decent option at second base. He's only second baseman 16 right now, but a few guys ahead of him are being used, probably at other positions, especially third. So is Stott, back on your radar more? Are you looking to add him if he was dropped by, a manager after a really tough first month? Or do you think that this is more just kind of him getting back to where he usually is and then he's going to continue to be, mediocre the rest of the year?
Yeah, I have Stott in a 12-teamer, but he's just fully on my bench. Like, I don't really start him that often unless I have an opening at second for that day. I mean, what is kind of nice is the power speed combo is like decent. Like, he probably will get to 30 steals by the end of the season, or at least really close to that number. I think the bigger question is whether he can get to 15 homers this year. The average being lower this year doesn't help at 241 as well. So yeah, to me, I think he's still a guy maybe worth keeping on your bench just because second base is so shallow. And there probably isn't a better second baseman available. But at the same time, it's really hard to roster him on a day in a day out basis just because of how just kind of how infrequent kind of the good stuff comes for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is definitely a little bit inconsistent. He's made some nice gains against lefties this year. You know, he's actually walking more and striking out less against lefties than righties, and he has a better WRC plus. So he's played his way out of the platoon, which is nice, and I think makes him more relevant in shallower leagues. But at the same time, yeah, there's nothing besides the steals to really carry the profile. But he's 15 for 15, so hopefully he just keeps running wild and, you know, gets that 30 by the end of the year.
Yeah, 40 RBIs for sure is pretty decent for him. His career high looks to be 66, so probably shouldn't be able to eclipse that. He just, you know, bats in the second half of that Philly order, and so it's just a little tougher to get those opportunities. But you know, if he's able to contribute, maybe at least more in the fifth position where he batted the last two games on Tuesday and Wednesday, that'll give him an opportunity, I think, to at least get a few more counting stats that way.
Yeah, and one thing I've always noticed with him is like his swing profile is kind of weird. He chases, you know, like at a league average or maybe slightly above league average this year type rate, but his swing rate is always lower than average. So he's just more, he's not, you know, relative to the league, he's more aggressive out of the zone than he is in the zone. And I think that, you know, that's probably hurting his ability to consistently do damage too. So I think that that does limit, you know, his kind of upside at the plate a little bit. So keeping with the Phillies for the pitching side, Ball and Sprouts was Nick's SP roundup, but I'm going to talk about probably one of the most infuriating pitchers in fantasy for the last 2 years, and he had a classic Jesus Luzardo outing in this one. Tough matchup at the Nationals, took the no decision. 6 2/3, 5 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, but 13 strikeouts on 19 whiffs and a 38% CSW on 104 pitches. And yeah, 13 strikeouts in the golden goal from us for this one. But the ratios are, you know, going to make people think he's bad, but also just drive you crazy and keep hurting your team. There is some bad luck here. Nick felt like he was getting singled out a lot in the fourth inning when the Nationals really ran. I think they scored at least four of those runs in the fourth inning. But Nick feels like you should keep starting him, just keep trusting it. And, you know, the upside is obviously there. But the ratios are they're frustrating. It's a 4.39 ERA and a 1.31 whip. It has gotten better in the ERA department since his first four starts of the year, which were really rough. But yeah, Nick feels like this is a good buy low. Do you kind of share the same opinion, or is it too volatile of an experience for you to, you know, give up some real assets for?
Yeah, it's so I was just looking at some stats. He's got a 49% ground ball rate, which is good for 83 percentile in the league. So, you know, decent. The problem is that the defense behind him is the second worst in baseball. In terms of defensive runs saved, the Phillies are 29th. They've got minus 29 runs saved. The Twins are the worst at minus 30 feet, which I'm not surprising. They literally have a new guy in their infield every single day. But yeah, I'm sure that doesn't help Luzardo in being a ground ball, like a, you know, not a heavy ground ball pitcher, but, you know, a pretty decent ground ball pitcher who doesn't have a great defense behind him to back it up. Like, yeah, he's still striking out a ton of guys, 28%, had 13 in this one, which is crazy. Doesn't necessarily give the free pass to a lot of them. I mean, yeah, it's 7.7% is a little high, but it's not like prohibitively high. It's, yeah, I guess you could kind of say he's a little unlucky with a 346 BABIP. I would say, like, if you have guys who can nail down your ratios, which, I mean, you'd have to have aces, I guess, that's where you would have some interest in Luzardo. Other than that, like, the ratios are a little scary, and it's like, unless you really need the strikeouts, I guess, maybe that's where I'd go after Luzardo. But, yeah, I don't know if I would have necessarily the desire to go after him just because of what those ratios look like. And just because of the context of the fact that, like, he is just going to have a high whip for the season. Like, that's just going to be reality for him. Maybe he can bring down the ERA a little bit, but he's basically pitching around his career average. So I think if you're okay with his makeup right now, then you keep him. But if your team, like, does have some issues with ratios, then maybe I don't go out and get Luzardo.
Yeah, I think that he is kind of becoming one of those guys who is going to underperform his peripherals a little bit. It might not be every season, but that is kind of my expectation for him on the whole a little bit. He does seem to just kind of struggle with runners on base. You know, I'm looking at his stats this year and then for his career too, and there's some interesting stuff that jumps out. Base is empty. He's got a 298 wOBA against, with people on base, 341, right? So huge difference there. He's also dominated the first time through the order, and then the second and third time he's been significantly worse. So there could be like some hit clustering there that might stick around. And then you look at his career too, it's the same thing. Bases empty, 293 wOBA, men on base, 333, men in scoring position, 338. So the league as a whole does pitch worse with runners on base, right? Runners in scoring position, stuff like that. Hitters do better, but they don't do that much better on average, right? So I think that, you know, if you look at the whole career, it's not a small sample size at this point. So I think that there is just some struggles that he has with runners on base that are going to stick around. So I do think that's unfortunately going to lead to a little bit more ERA volatility, but I still think his true talent is better than, you know, the low fours he's rolling with right now.
Yeah, he has a 70% left on base rate, which, you know, decent, but it's a 35th percentile number, right? And you'd kind of hope that's higher for a guy with such great strikeout ability to, like, yeah, when guys are on base that he's able to kind of, you know, finish it by getting a strikeout, or, you know, by able to, well, I guess he could induce a ground ball, but as we kind of said, the Phillies might not be able to turn that into a positive outs. But yeah, I kind of just wish maybe that the ability to strike out guys with two outs, maybe if that could be a little bit better for Luzardo, I think that would help him at least, you know, bring down some of these ratios.
Yeah, I think my conclusion is that I'm open to a buy low, but I'm not going to offer as if he's a low three ERA pitcher like the peripherals suggest. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on to the 24th. Thanks to Ben Solo for the Swanson's Pyramid of Greatness hitter recap article talking about Dansby Swanson. But we're going to talk about Paul Goldschmidt, who went 2-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 2 RBIs. So 2 solo shots for Goldie. He had both these go against Skubal, kind of impressive. First inning, maybe it was a little bit lucky for him. It was a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Oh, sorry, not fastball. It was a 95-mile-an-hour exit velocity on the hit. And StatCast only gave it a 40% chance of becoming a hit, but Goldie does not care about the stats. He hit that one for a homer. But the second one was a little bit more vintage Goldie, 104.9 miles an hour off the bat, 427 feet to left field. And yeah, Goldie at 38 has been an integral part of the Yankees offense for the last month and a half. You know, his stats look a little weird if you look at them because he's only played in 54 games, 211 plate appearances, but he's been a mainstay in the lineup for pretty much the last month and a half, basically since May. And he now has 14 homers, which is crazy. Like, he hasn't even played a full half season, but it could look like he's on pace for 30 to finish the season. With first base kind of just being a bunch of meh right now, I feel like it's Matt Olson and then, I don't know, just a bunch of guys behind him. Do you think Goldie is going to finish the year as a top 10 first baseman, or is this a little bit more of like, hey, old guy is doing really well for like 2 months, but we really know that age is going to ultimately catch up to him this season?
Yeah, I don't know if I could quite go to top 10, but I don't think I would be too far outside of it. He's obviously already built a great foundation with this home run and average combo. And yeah, I think he's done enough to, you know, justify keep playing every day. So yeah, I feel good about his chances to continue to be a contributor for the second half. More so in power than the batting average, I would say. He is pulling his fly balls down the line a ton. Like, it's like 10 of his 14 home runs are to the left of left center field, and most of those are like right down the line, right? So he, you know, he's old, right? He doesn't have the same bat speed he used to, so he's making the most of, you know, his current tools and really tapping into that power as much as he can. But the batting average, I think, is a little bit misleading at this point. So yeah, I would say that I feel decent about him continuing to be a solid contributor. He's been great for me in a league where I desperately needed some power. But he's not, when he's not barreling the ball, he's not really hitting it that hard consistently. His average exit velo is like way below his career average. So yeah, I think that there's some good stuff here, but it's definitely not fully sustainable. But I mean, he was probably not drafted, you know, in a lot of leagues, so you've gotten a ton of good stuff from him. It's definitely found money to some extent.
Yeah, the 11% barrel rate is impressive, I think, from Goldie at this point. The average, as you mentioned, you know, really solid as well at 297. And I think the fact is that he's making the most of his power with those pulled homers, right, at this point with what he has in his career. But yeah, first base is kind of interesting just in general. I mean, I should say Ben Rice is actually the best first baseman right now, according to the player rater. And after him is Kurtz, then Liam Hicks, who also has catcher eligibility, Alec Burleson, surprisingly having a really solid year this year, and then Matt Olson at five. But then after him, it's just kind of a bunch of just guys, you know, like Bryce Harper has not had the best season this year. Pete Alonso has not had the best season this year. Freddie Freeman struggling a little bit. So yeah, there might be a way for Goldie to sneak into the top 15, maybe if he kind of continues with this high average and power combo. But yeah, I mean, I would say at least for sure in like a 15 teamer, he is paying dividends right now.
Right. And I think that first base is, you know, there's some good top end options. And I think that the midsection of it is solid enough that this is probably one of the positions, you know, you want your utility or your CI, maybe even both. If it's like an NFBC league, you want them coming from, you know, positions like this. There's a decent amount of depth here. So yeah, I think that you can find a lot of reasons to roster Paul Goldschmidt. You know, maybe you get down to like a 10 team where you're only starting like 9 or 10 hitters. It becomes a little fringe at that point. But I think he's shown enough, you know, lately that you just ride the hot streak.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the pitchers. We have the Jose story. I know from Nick talking about Jose Soriano and the start that we already kind of talked about earlier this episode. So we're going to talk about Griffin Jacks as well. He got the win in Kansas City this one. 5 innings, no one runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Honestly, I've been kind of holding off on getting excited about Jacks because I still don't know if I completely believe the reliever to pitcher pipeline that Tampa Bay is doing. But he went for 5 innings for the 7th time in 9 games. So he's, you know, finally able to qualify for wins. He's not just starting 3 to 4 innings. Went up to 88 pitches in this one. So really looks like he's, you know, full. I mean, he has been fully stretched out, but it really looks like Tampa Bay is willing to let him go deep into games at this point. Changeup is still really good. 32% swing strike rate. Sweeper is solid as well. He gets Kansas City next too. So, you know, a good option. He's probably available as a streamer in most leagues, I'd still think. This start, you know, specifically that changeup actually got 8 whiffs, really impressive. The other pitches were fine. The sweeper got 7 called strikes, which it's not really what's designed to do. But yeah, he's somehow making this formula work and is going deep enough into games to start, you know, basically earning wins. Does this kind of put Jacks on your radar? I know he's been kind of mentioned a couple times. A little bit of spoiler alert, he's going to get mentioned a little bit later in the episode. But as kind of a full-time guy on your roster, do you think he has that potential at this point, or is he still more of a premium streamer?
I think he's shown enough at this point, you know, that you can hold him, you know, for the long term, at least in wins leagues. I think quality starts are still going to be very infrequent if you get any from him. But yeah, wins leagues with how the Rays are doing and how he's been doing, I think, you know, you're starting him. He's had a lot of success. And like you said, he's got the sweeper to righties, which he throws really hard, but gets like a foot of sweep on it. So it's only like 8 miles per hour, maybe even 7.5 off the fastball, but he gets a huge movement differential. And then the changeup is really good to lefties too. So yeah, I feel like he has the arsenal to succeed against, you know, hitters of both handedness, and his velocity has barely ticked down in moving from the bullpen to the rotation. So yeah, I feel like he's made this transition pretty successfully. And as long as he's on the Rays, I'm going to believe in it. You know, once he leaves the Rays, then I'm going to be pretty skeptical because, you know, the Rays just kind of have that secret sauce a little bit. But yeah, I think I'm happy to continue to use him for the rest of the season. It is ERA and wins are kind of his best categories. I think the whip is still a little bit of a risk with some of the walks, but overall I'm happy with, you know, how he's been doing the last month.
Yeah, it is kind of impressive with Jacks, kind of just knowing the pitcher he was as a reliever for the Twins, where, I mean, he did have this big arsenal, but sometimes you just kind of prefer it if he stuck with, you know, kind of the four seam sweeper as a reliever and then just kind of, you know, sprinkle in the other pitches as they come in. But yeah, he instead now is going full kind of secondaries first, so to speak. The sweeper's got a 25% usage, changeup 22% usage, and then the sinker is the first fastball in at 21%, and the four seamer after that 17%. So yeah, he's able to, you know, have good pitches to both sides of the plate, as you kind of mentioned, is finding success with all of those. So It is impressive to see what the Rays have done with him, and I think that velocity thing that you mentioned is really impressive as well. His seamer's only gone down, four seamer's only gone down like one tick since his bullpen days last year. So impressive nonetheless. I don't know if I still completely trust him because it seems like he's still just on the verge of getting five innings. So, you know, makes him a little less valuable in wins leagues. And that whip is still, you know, 1.31, just not exactly what I'd love to see. But nonetheless, yeah, it is impressive to see what the Rays have done with him this year.
Right, and he has strikeout stuff, but since he only goes five innings, his strikeout production isn't, you know, like plus necessarily. So I do think, yeah, it's pretty ERA and win dependent at this point. But, you know, like I said, or like you said, we are going to talk about him in the streamer. So he definitely has, you know, my interest for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, that wraps it up for player performances. So yeah, let's move into streamers and see who we've got for this upcoming week.
Yep, so just recapping quickly, 2 weeks ago was probably one of the worst weeks that I've had this year, but you know, that's how it goes sometimes. One win, one tie, and or one push, and two losses. Randy Vasquez got lit up. He was a loss. Martin Perez was a win. He got the win in six innings of one run ball with five strikeouts and a 1.33 whip. Trevor McDonald was another loss with just three earned in three innings. And then Andrew Alvarez was kind of a push. He had two starts, but he only went eight innings with 11 strikeouts, only two earned in a 1.25 whip. So no wins, but good strikeouts and ERA. And then we'll recap the guys from last week next time, but it's looking like it could be a 3-1 week, which would be great. We'll just see how it wraps up. And yeah, this week we're going back to the well on Griffin Jacks, who was a win this past week. He's getting more rostered, so I might have to leave the segment soon. 41% Yahoo, 43% CBS. He's got two road starts, which isn't ideal. You know, pitching in the trop is always better, but it's at Kansas City and at Houston, which are both, you know, Houston a little tougher than Kansas City, but I think Jax's form, you know, merits running with him, at least in wins leagues. And there is some whip risk there, like I said. Next one is Shane Drouin of the Brewers. He's 16% Yahoo, 25% CBS. He's got two home starts, which is a good place to pitch, especially for strikeouts. And it's Cincinnati and Arizona, which is two struggling offenses. Similar to Jax, not a quality starts league play. Much better for wins, you know, more of a five-inning type guy. Next one is Anthony Kay of the White Sox, 14% Yahoo, 34% CBS. He's wrapping up a two-start this week, so we'll see how the second one goes. But next week, it's one start at Cleveland, who he just did really well against at home. I mean, we're seeing some interesting changes with Kay, actually. He's throwing his fastball like a tick harder in his last couple starts, and he's using his sweeper more, which is his best secondary by PLV. And in those three starts, he's got a 3.6 ERA and a 17-4 K to walk, so maybe he's turning the corner a little bit. And then last one, this is daily leagues only, is Javier Assad of the Cubs, 18% Yahoo, 31% CBS. Two home starts against the Padres and Cardinals. And the reason why I say daily leagues only is because you never know how the win's going to be in Wrigley, so you don't want to lock him into your lineups too early. And the Cubs have a ton of uncertainty in the rotation right now. So, you know, just check back in kind of beginning of next week and see what the schedule is looking like. He's throwing a little harder on all of his pitches, but it hasn't translated to more whiffs yet. So a little bit more of a low ceiling play, but just figured I would put him on your radar as well.
Yeah, Anthony Kay is kind of interesting because he's got a really, really good sweeper, as you mentioned. Everything else is not great. So if his game is on and he's up against, you know, weak offense, like we've kind of been saying Cleveland has been, despite Travis Bazzano obviously doing well. Yeah, it could work out well for him. Shane Drouin, I mean, just another guy who the Brewers just unearth from somewhere and turn into like a decent starter. So I know he's played decently. I haven't really been following too many of his starts this season, but I know it's been it's been impressive for a guy who like was not expected to be part of the starting rotation. So solid stuff from him. Oh yeah, 24% strikeout rate, so yeah, that's definitely pretty decent from a guy who is a streamer. So like those plays.
Yeah, he's only gone over five innings one time, so a little bit of a low ceiling, but you know, the Brewers they're pretty much reaching, you know, Ray's level of pitching development trust for me at this point. So if they have someone in the rotation, you know, I'm going to be keeping an eye on what they're doing for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week in Fantasy Baseball. Again, you can find us on Twitter at This Week PL. You could send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at the John Cut. You can find Patrick at P Fitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitchless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.